Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back to Old Millennium, a mini episode doing a kind of a toe dip into pop culture topics, but specifically a very special holiday episode for you, because tis the season.
Tis season.
I'm one of your hosts, Margot Poupard.
And I am one of your other hosts, Emily Bajin.
And welcome back.
Yay.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I forget what day it is. It's that thing. It's that time after Thanksgiving, before Christmas, or even till the end of the year. You're like, I don't know what day it is.
I don't know what day it is. Early mid-December.
Early mid?
No,
what?
It's early. It's early, early.
Early mid, Jesus.
Again.
And it's exactly the perfect time of year because it is midnight at 5 p.m., for you to stay inside. It is, once I get home from work, I am never leaving my house season.
Yep.
And it's the perfect time to watch a holiday movie on Netflix. Hallmark, we're doing both.
That's right.
Not on this episode. There will be a separate episode for Hallmark because that's its own mess. It's also, you know, like the original flavor of good, bad holiday movies.
I've been comparing it to people as Netflix is like Hallmark movies, but they recognize that people of color and LGBTQ people exist.
Not the ones I watched.
Oh, no. Well, I watched a few that were slightly better in that department. At least one or two of them.
Well, we have a game, so we can't give each other too many clues.
Yeah.
So we're going to play a little game in regards to these wonderful Netflix holiday movies. There's some new releases. Netflix has been making movies for a little while now, haven't they?
Yeah, I feel
the
like
holiday
really,
ones specifically.
Yeah, they specifically got really into it in like 2016, 2017 is when it really kind of took off.
I think the Christmas Prince really put them on the map because I remember many tweets talking about how deranged this movie's plot was.
Yeah.
It was like a dash of Princess Diaries.
And the Prince and Me little bit. Like, I think there's...
And then what's that Amanda Bynes movie?
What a Girl Wants.
There we go. There was some of that.
And I think part of it is also... And not, I know it's like...
It was also every single trope you could ever imagine rolled into one.
I think they came out around the right time, though. It was like, I remember reading a lot of articles right after Trump got elected. It was like the surge in popularity of Hallmark movies. And I think when Netflix started to capitalize on this, I think it's because they're so like at times dumb, one-dimensional, predictable. Like, you know what's going to happen in the next 85 minutes.
It's really, really
easy to watch.
You don't have to think about it.
On your phone while you're watching it. Like, you are
that's
not
how you should watch these movies.
Well, you're going to miss some really great stuff, and by me,
it kind of depends, because I feel like there were some Hallmark movies where I was like, I take out a whole 35 minutes of this.
Yeah, this could very well be a very special episode of a sitcom.
I mean... The problem is that it couldn't be a full-on sitcom. That's where the issues up.
Right.
There's like an extra 30. It's sort of like 90 Day Fiancé where they repeat the same information that you already know about like 12 different times over the course of an hour too long, frankly.
So in case you missed it the first four times when you were playing on your phone.
Yeah, I guess. And then even then, it doesn't even quite stick. Because what I love about these movies I think a good quality of any good, bad movie is that it just... In one ear, right out the other. You don't really remember quite what happened, but it doesn't really matter. You had fun. Didn't you laugh?
Exactly. And you know very quickly who's who in this film. Like, there's not going to be, or very
rarely. Oh, because it's like everybody fits into like a stereotype. Everyone's a stereotype.
Exactly.
And some of it also even feels a little bit rebooted from and borrowed from other rom-coms.
For sure.
Especially the Netflix ones.
Yes.
They feel a little bit more ham-fisted. Of a pastiche versus, well, it's not like Hallmark just recycles their own ideas, I believe.
They really do. It's just some other aspect of the holiday season they'll tie it to.
One thing I wonder if you've noticed this pattern as well before we get into the Netflix Guess This Movie game. It's extremely chaste, both in Netflix and on Hallmark. Like, they don't, there's not even an allusion to fucking, forget that.
No.
There's one peck. At the very end, and my God, do they have to work for it. It's like The Bachelor in so many ways.
Right.
Where, like, everybody's all about working towards getting married, proposed to, or, like, love, and finding a serious relationship. That they take it so seriously that they just, to kiss you, even though they've only known each other for a week in, like, real people time, you're like, oh, my God, I'm, like, so dehydrated by all of the work that I've had to do to get to this point.
For
like,
sure.
Please just fucking kiss.
For sure. And it's, it's usually at the end of the 85 minutes that they finally share a very tight-lipped...
A chase kiss, sometimes under mistletoe, yes, on theme, or in the snow.
Or in the middle of a town. Like,
I feel like sometimes they all talk like they are bachelor contestants.
For sure. For sure.
Being there for the right reasons.
They're there for the right reasons. There's, like, the change of heart. There might have been some conflict ending, but then things get better. There's very
elusive job titles. Yes. In one of the Hallmark movies that I watched, this woman is, like, an international museum curator, but chooses to return to Nashville. I was like, I'm going to call bullshit on some of this.
Yeah, these are the jobs we all dreamed of in, liberal arts schools.
Well, these are the ones that give you a false sense of security as a child, being like,
and you're like, oh, I'm going to be able to get this job one
I could
day.
Be like Charlotte. I could curate a museum and live in a penthouse. Hits. Yeah, well, that, I feel like even before that, these jobs were...
Right. They don't exist.
Not that common.
No, and if they did, they do exist. You are not making very much money. You are not able to, like, live this lifestyle that they portray.
Yeah, as a writer, I do not understand how Carrie affords all those shoes.
That's...
Or her life, really. I mean, I guess in retrospect, it's not like she, like, traveled a lot, but even still.
Even still.
All right. So, the rules of this game. Emily and I gave each other a list of a couple of movies, holiday movies on Netflix that we were going to potentially watch. We were going to watch two and then try to do our best to confuse the person and have them guess what the name of this plot is. So the movies that I told you that I was going to choose a possible two out of were as follows. A Dog Walker's Christmas Tale. But Tale is spelled T-A-L-E instead of with an I, which I think is a missed opportunity. Right?
What? That is such a missed opportunity.
It's right there.
Damn you, English major who worked on this and did not capitalize on such a thing.
Or just someone that, like, just missed the obvious joke. Okay. Yeah. Holiday in the Wild, Santa's Girl, Night Before Christmas, and The Holiday Calendar.
But
what?
Excellent. I just saw, like, Night Before Christmas is spelled.
Oh, but they did that correctly.
Yes, yes. That's what I'm saying is, like, they got on the right. They hopped on this.
Well, that's
train.
A Vanessa Hudgens production, so she's not going to miss the opportunity to punch up a little
of
bit.
Of course not. She was the smart girl in High School Musical.
Everybody knows that. Okay, what were your picks?
So my picks were Christmas Inheritance, Let It Snow, Holiday Rush, and El Camino Christmas.
It's really a choice for them to also have a movie called El Camino Christmas, which I assume is very different than Breaking Bad's El Camino.
El Camino. Well, you'll find out. Okay. Or not.
Suspenseful. Should we flip a coin to see who goes first?
Sure.
Or we'll flip my Buffy pin because I don't have a fucking coin in here.
All right.
Heads or tails?
I call heads.
Okay. You go first.
Okay. So here is my first pick. This movie, I best describe it as, what if Love Actually was a less problematic movie and was instead set in a small town and starred a bunch of teenagers who are just trying to figure out their shit, along with a few chance encounters on Christmas Eve, with all the plots converging at a party at the local diner. This takes place on Christmas Eve in a town called Laurel, Illinois, where we have a girl named Julie who runs into a rising pop star named Stuart Bale on a train.
This is already way too much for me. I cannot. He's a pop star. They meet on a fucking train.
Yep, Meet not so cute.
Well, you know, train travel is actually quite expensive.
Yes, it is. It is.
And what aspiring pop star is traveling by train? Get his ass on a fucking bus. What are we doing here?
Budget cuts.
No, it's a budget increase.
No, but on Netflix end, budget cuts.
Oh.
They have a meet not so.
Wait, is Netflix just sitting on a train?
Maybe Amtrak paid a lot of money. You know, that's sweet spawn con. You know, it's just like, if we met on this Amtrak.
Oh, there is so much product placement in both my movies. I don't know about you.
They have a meet not so cute when she phoned that he dropped on this train and he mistakes her as paparazzi, like one of his fans.
Oh, wow.
They are later stuck because of the snow and they decide to get off the train, and because this nearby diner called the Waffle Hut, and they have a friendship. We learn that the girl named Julie has been accepted to Columbia on a scholarship, but doesn't want to go because her mom is terminally ill. And
one of those classic scenarios.
Exactly. And during this time, of course, they go from hating each other to loving each other. And in turn, our nice...
Emily, will they end up together?
Well,
even though he's an aspiring pop star?
I don't know. I mean, the pop star whose name is Stuart Bale.
Let's pause. Let's, yes. Stuart, not even Stu.
No. Stuart.
I'm Bale. I don't believe there's a lawyer or a lawyer, a agent in the world that would let you continue on as Stuart Bale. He would just like scrap the whole thing and you just end up being like Bailey, one word. Monosyllabic.
Of course, they have a disagreement when he tries to, you know, very nicely offers to get her mom a nurse so that she can go to Columbia.
Whoa, that escalated very quickly.
That escalates very quickly. That's also like Netflix Hallmark world. Everything goes from 0 to 100 very quickly.
I mean, sure, but I also feel like he's still an aspiring pop star, so we don't know how his career is going to pan out. Is it stable?
A 3-week nurse.
Exactly. Is he like a YouTube hit? Like, what are we talking about? What's the longevity? Who is he? Is he opening
a billboard at the beginning?
Is he opening for Shawn Mendes this summer? Like, what are we doing?
You know, is he regular SpawnCon? I'm not really sure. We don't
exactly like how much. If he does hit regular SpawnCon, how much does he get paid? We've got so many. Where is the budget? Where is the line budget?
So we need. I mean, I'd like to know. So, of course, she sees this as a charity case, and they get into an argument.
Why is that?
He just cares about, he claims that he just cares about her, and she's trying to brush him off because, of course, she can't open her heart because
it's also been 12 hours. It's been 12 hours.
It's been 12 hours, and already we're offering, like, at-home care. Like, this is an, I don't know what kind of base this is.
Actually, you know what?
Netflix movie territory. I think it's solid.
I feel like it's, I feel like it's very much what 18-year-olds do.
For sure. For sure. For sure. So they almost kiss. During,
oh, no.
Yes. And then his publicist shows up, who's played by...
Judy Greer.
Darcy Garden. Good Place. Okay,
I mean, basically Judy Greer.
Basically. And then he offers for her to come with him, and she declines because the publicist is like, let me get you out of this town. I can't believe they don't have a Starbucks. Oh, my God. And she declines, and she wants to just stay with her mom. Okay. Let's keep that one plot and let's go on to the second one because there are multiple, of course, this
oh my
being
God.
Like a Love Actual. But luckily there's only like two. The second plot is around these two best friends. Doris, played by Liv Hewson, who works at the Waffle Hut that we talked about earlier, where she is just trying to calm her best friend, Addie, down, played by Odeya Rush, whose boyfriend hasn't been replying to her texts and who doesn't seem to care. And she's having a meltdown over it. And so Dory's just like, I can't deal with this. And just, like, storms off. Meanwhile, a group of cheerleaders shows up to the restaurant, including this one girl that Dory hooked up with in the past, who seems to be ignoring her. So every time she tries to, like, reach out to her, she's being kind of a bitch. And we're thinking, like, maybe she's closeted. I don't know. So that's plot two. We'll get back to that one in a second. And then the final plot includes Tobin and his best friend, who goes by the name The Duke. Her real name's Angie, but she goes by The Duke. She's, like, a tomboy. She's played by Kiernan Shipka. Tobin, of course, has feelings for his best friend, even though she's after a guy named JP, who's back in town from college. It's clear he has a thing for her as well. Like, they have a series of adventures where they steal a keg, and they go to make this party happen that we're going to talk about in a second. So
we're not even at a party yet?
We're not even at the party, but the two of them eventually get into a fight when Tobin is kind of jealous of the Duke having feelings for JP. And then we leave them disagreeing, and the Duke has run off with that guy, JP. I'm not going to go into any more of that plot. The plots converge.
This is the problem when there are multiple plot lines for different... Not all of them are interesting. Like,
no.
I'm dying to hear more about the aspiring star.
I mean, it's only a much better one.
I'm sure... I mean, you told me... I'm just going to go ahead and say it's Let It Snow because you told me that Kieran Shipka was in it.
Damn it. Yeah, I mean, it is. It is. I'll just finish up the plot. It is Let It Snow. It was based on a book co-written by... This is the same guy who did, like, the Fault
in
Our Stars.
Oh, no.
Like, it's everything. Well, I mean, there is a cancer patient in it.
But no one dies.
No one dies. You know of.
What? Are you presupposing that there's a prequel where someone dies?
Well, no. Just that we're left at the end of this movie with Hyde. But, like,
oh,
the reason mom is, like, all pretty much terminally ill is what
we're
led to believe.
I see what you're saying.
Yes,
Emily,
yes.
That's where you went. You went there.
I did.
She's geography. Saying that the mom's dead.
The mom is not dead yet. The intertwining plot is around Tobin's wannabe DJ friend, Kayon, who, a la Dazed and Confused, is forced to relocate his party when his parents find out about it. His supervisor at Waffle Town, because of course he also works at this waffle place, lets him hold the party there, and the party takes place on Christmas Eve. Okay, so, like, how are these kids not obligated to spend time with their families? Almost everyone in Point is a minor. Like, I don't really understand where everyone on Christmas Eve is all of a sudden free to go about this party at, like, this diner, which is very secluded from the rest of the town, it appears like. So it's just, like, a whole mess. But unlike Love Actually, everything here ends on a pretty happy note. So it kind of feels a little Empire wreck at certain points. Back at home, his mom is like convinces her to go to Columbia, and she says
she's not dead yet.
Not dead yet.
As you wished.
Her soon to be dead mom convinces her to go to Columbia, stating, quote, "When life offers you something special, you take it."
Was that okay? I'm sorry, but was that really quote worthy? I think that's pretty much just any influencer's Instagram.
It is, and it's also every kind of like 1 hour and 50 minute point of a Hallmark or Netflix movie is usually someone saying a line like this. That is like the catalyst, like over the conflict of like, I no longer need to worry about this thing. This can end in a happy way.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, everybody ends up at this party. Duke and Tobin confess their love to one another, and they end up making out on top of what when the set. That's why it made me think of Empire Records. Then Dory and Julie, reconciling, and they end up together, and Julie kind of comes out to her cheerleader friends as gay, and then
Oh right, I forgot about that plot line.
And then meanwhile our aspiring singer
pop star, Stuart the pop star,
and our high school student who's been accepted to Columbia kiss and make up and plan to meet in New York when she goes to Columbia and he is living there, and that's pretty
good luck kids.
Final part.
Oh, God.
Throughout this entire movie, the narration is coming from the snowplow driver in town, otherwise known as the tinfoil hat lady.
Excuse me?
Because she wears a tinfoil hat, and she is played by Joan Cusack.
Okay.
And there is one point in which she picks up Addie, the girl who is pissed off about her boyfriend not answering her texts, and, like, gets Addie to remember, like, her friendships and the true meaning of friendship.
That's all great and everything, but Joan Cusack?
It was really random. This is the only, I would say this was the only abductor that was of note in this movie. Like,
right.
Everyone else, I mean, I guess I know who Darcy Carden is because I love The Good Place, but.
And you know Kiernan Shipka is.
Of course, but, like, in terms of adult actors, I guess I'm saying.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And then the kid actors, like, that was, Kiernan Shipka, of course, was probably the most famous. And then Liv Hewson is the daughter on Santa Clarita Diet, and then Odeya Rush has been in a few other things, but kids I didn't know, but I think they're Nickelodeon, Disney in the last 5-10 years, so there's obvious reasons I wouldn't know who they were.
Well, call into the Who Weekly podcast.
Yes, I have a list.
Okay, so my plot summary is much shorter. Get ready to pick out clues.
Okay.
A controlling woman's only child goes off to college, and she is interned, immediately dumped by her husband on the eve of their second honeymoon trip to South Africa.
Mm.
She decides to bust out of her type A personality and go on the trip by herself. On her first night, during a couple's dinner turned into for one, she meets a mismatched love interest who introduces himself via negging. Her love interest? He's a real shoot from the hip, frills, Blake Sheldon kind of type guy.
Of course he is.
He says things like, "I like your boy, and I don't usually like humans," and calls her New York, and not in like a Flava Flav kind of way at all, but like in a mocking way because she's like a New York upper crust lady who lunches type, and he resents that. The next day, she is shocked to discover that the dickhead from the night before is also her pilot. Something happened, tiny little prop plane that looks incredibly unsafe and why you should never fly two-seaters.
No.
That's exactly what happened to Anne Heche and Harrison Ford in 6 Days, 7 Nights, and
I also think
where did that end up?
Aaliyah is no longer. I think she
well, that too.
One of those planes.
I mean, they're just like wildly unsafe. Even
yeah.
over Thanksgiving, like some prominent family in Ohio like died tragically.
I saw that. Yeah,
right?
That's just. I mean, you just know. Like, if any, and rock and roll history, like if Buddy Holly, like all these people have taught us anything.
Was it like Woody Guthrie who like died tragically? No.
No, it's Buddy. It's Buddy Holly.
Nope, there's someone
Richie
else.
Richie Valens.
Nope.
Bopper.
Nope. Keep going. His daughter had a really good.
John Denver.
I was haunted by a ghost story. Celebrity ghost story.
Wow.
Yeah, on True TV. She grew up in Errol Flynn's old house, and she could have sworn that she had seen Errol Flynn's malicious ghost.
Oh, is that the same Houdini house that, like, the Red Hot Chili
Yes, but, like, her dad, and her dad was, like, slowly driven mad by
yeah,
this house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was always scared of flying, and finally he decided to, like, conquer his fear and went
That's
into, like, a tiny
literally
plop.
Literally a lyric in an Alanis Morissette song.
Exactly.
Ironic.
He gets into his tiny prop plane and flies and dies the first time he ever tries flying. So don't fly on tiny prop planes. They're fucking terrifying. All right, so something happens with this unsafe plane. They end up spending a bunch of time at an elephant sanctuary where not Blake Shelton works, paints, and bangs an investor. Despite being as a holiday movie, there are only two Christmas scenes that amount to about roughly 8 minutes of screen time, making it mostly a movie about elephants with like a holidays and more of like a broad quote-unquote family message. And not Blake dumps his investor bang buddy, and she, in turn, spitefully pulls funding from the elephant sanctuary. And Mrs. X New York has to go back home. When we think all hope is lost and they'll never fall in love and those cute ass will end up homeless, it cuts to 3 months later and it's still not Christmas yet. But Mrs. X New York is using her considerable privilege, her high standing in society, to raise money for these elephants. Eventually, our opposites attract couple figure out how to make it work. It's basically she sacrifices her entire life to go back to South Africa to hang out with him at this elephant sanctuary because he says he doesn't belong anywhere else. She brings him a Keurig machine, because she always talked about how terrible all of the coffee was and there wasn't an espresso machine there, so she wants to spoil him. Anyway, they get back together and literally ever after, or do they? This movie has the nerve to pull a The Graduate kind of ending.
Are they like sent off a jeep or a safari jeep or something like that?
No, so she gets back to the elephant sanctuary, gives him this Keurig and like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And then they sort of look at each other and like, oh, we're saved. Like, you sent all this money.
Yeah.
And then it just slow zoom and hello darkness, my old friend. Like, this was such a bizarre ending.
I'm gonna guess this is our Rob Lowe, Kristen Davis.
You betcha.
I have avoided seeing this movie for a month because
it's not good. I did not enjoy this movie. I greatly enjoyed other movie that I watched, but this wasn't really fun. It was sort of like in Rodanthe.
That's what you know what? I thought this had tinges of Nicholas Sparks feelings to it.
It was Knights and Rodanthe meets like the lesser parts of Sex and the City 2, because she was clearly playing like a Charlotte character.
Yeah.
And I thought Rob Lowe was trying so hard to be this rake, just being like, oh, I don't fucking care, like, you're a fucking bitch. Like, just was just so like off-putting.
And maybe that worked in like what, St. Elmo's Fire?
Exactly. He was like
35 fucking
that's
years
a really
ago.
Good point, because I feel like he was definitely acting in a movie from the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was being Charlotte.
Yeah.
And this whole movie was like, oh, we're gonna just like shoehorn in holiday shit because like we don't want to make a movie, like we don't want to make a rom-com, or not even a rom-com, like it's mildly rom-com-y.
Yeah.
But they don't want to make a romantic movie geared towards middle-aged people without it having some sort of shtick, because who gives a elephants, apparently.
Of course.
And so they just shellacked on some holiday shit and then called it Holiday in the Wild.
Now, was this filmed in South Africa, or is this kind of like, remember Prince William and Kate Middleton Lifetime movie where we clearly had a green screen?
Do I? You
big Africa.
You know I watched Stan Markle get Botswana'd.
Oh, God.
I think they actually did shoot some of it in Africa.
Oh, good. Okay.
It looked like they used some sort of sanctuary. They did have elephants, or at least it looked real to me. I feel like I can kind of spot some CGI
shit. Like, that's one of the bigger differences between Hallmark and Netflix movies is Netflix,
budget.
Budget, for sure. Just like the actor quality. Like, you're going to get a few A-listers here and there to be in these in comparison to
Hallmark. In it for the Hallmark podcast. That's because Hallmark, I found this out recently, they have essentially like a Christmas village that they build in Toronto. And so they just recycle the same sets. They just kind of like shoot movies from July until October.
It's just
they're just
like
shooting nonstop.
This
because
week is going to be like the
Emily,
Ginger House
Emily,
store
they
woman.
They churn out 30 movies
incredible
over that span of time because they have a 30-day production schedule. They turn them out like that.
That's, I mean, like,
so yes, some of it does, but if you're making 30 movies in a 4 or 5 month span, some of them are going to look cheap.
They're going to look cheap. There's not going to be consistency with accents. Like, you're just going to get, you're not going to get, you know, Christian Bale acting.
Well, no one's expecting that, but you're not even going to
get 85 minutes of fun.
You're really going to get, like, Madonna in Body of Evidence. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to get someone, like, giving their all or something. It's not going to be, like, one of the good, bad movie performances.
People are there for the little paycheck.
But I think to your point earlier, I think, you know, it gives you the amount of acting that it deserves, which is scrolling on my phone, possibly getting up to like make something to eat and coming back and not pausing, you know, like one of those things.
Right.
Okay. Your turn for your next plot summary.
Of course, this falls in line with the Netflix Hallmark movie trope that kind of feels a little bit like Overboard or Sweet Home Alabama, where it's like city boy or girl ends up in a small town, is a fish out of water, clashes with a sexy single who runs the local hotel, store, church, school, what have you. They eventually fall in love.
Isn't it always a church, town square?
It's always.
Local museum. Local,
yeah. And, oh, something's going to happen. Something's going to shut down. Like, some conflict that's resulting in other conflict throughout the town.
Bizarre pressure and stress that you've never experienced in your adult life. You're like, no.
Oh, no. Will it all work out?
And you're like, I didn't even know this was a real
problem. Exactly. And then, but for some reason, Hallmark and Netflix made it out to be one. And during that time, they figure out the true meaning of whatever holiday is coming up or something like that. And they ditch the big city life for love and happiness. So that's basically a vague kind of lead into the plot for this, which is there is a big city rich lady named Alpha Ellen Langford, otherwise known as Ellen,
Wait, I'm sorry. Can you hit me with that name one more time?
Ellen Langford.
Wow. Okay.
Sounds like a lesser character on Designing Women.
Oh, see, I read WASP into that. I was like, Are we in Connecticut?
That too. It could be either one. It could be either one for sure. So she is set to receive her father's gift business called Home and Hearth, which just sounds like one of those brands Bath and Body Works carries.
But or something that you would find at a Home Goods.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like, you're going through the candle aisle in Home Goods, and you're like, what is this brand? Home and Hearth. And they sell a pumpkin spice candle. They sell an apple cinnamon candle. They sell a vanilla sugar cookie candle.
A Yankee candle, whatever the fuck that means.
Exactly. It's just the dreams of basic girls everywhere. In order to get this business, she has to go deliver a special Christmas card to her dad's former business partner in Snow Falls, which is the small town where the company started and where she's sort of from, but she's never really spent time there.
Wait, what state is that in?
Is that one
of those, like, made up, you know, like, wherever Princess Switch takes place?
Either,
like,
they never mentioned
Gandalfilia.
I never bothered to even write it down. So right. What's supposed to be a quick trip to a long ordeal when a snowstorm strands her at the town inn. Since she, of course, traveled incognito, so no one would know who she was, and only brought $100 because, like, what the fuck? She has to work at the inn to continue staying there.
I'm so sorry. She came incognito.
With $100 in a charter bus.
I can't.
The inn is run by Jake and his Aunt Debbie, who's played by Andy McDowell.
What?
Ellen butts heads with Jake because, of course, of conflict at the beginning, and wishes she could be back in New York getting ready for her vacation to Hawaii with her boyfriend. Ellen finds out that Jake cannot listen to Silent Night because his ex-wife left him while this song was playing, which reminded me of Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook, who gets triggered Cherie O'More by his Stevie Wonder plays.
Oh, right.
Because he walked in on his ex-wife sleeping with her coworker to that song. And I'm imagining, like, this guy is unable to navigate any shopping excursions during the holidays, because Silent Night is a standard. Like, oh, this one by this one artist. It's just, like, any version of Silent Night. So he can't go to a church. He can't go to a store. He can't go
Emily, to, like, life is ruined.
He's a shut-in during the holidays.
From November 1st to December 31st, his life is fucking ruined.
He's a perfect inn employee because he's not leaving the grounds because he cannot bear to listen to Silent Night during the holiday season. So when a snowstorm that initially stranded our girl and causes other people to be stranded around, Ellen and Jake team up to help take people into the inn and hold a charity silent auction. Over time, Jake and Ellen become friends and start developing feelings for one another despite Ellen's boyfriend back home. Eventually, Ellen's boyfriend, who does a great job playing the one-dimensional typical rich asshole boyfriend, shows up to take her back to New York so they can leave for their vacation and eventually reveals her real identity. Jake feels betrayed that he's been lied to and is kind of a jerk to her for not wanting to attract a bunch of attention. Like, okay, maybe the income thing was a bitch, but, like, honestly, and there are some, like, tinges of Schitt's Creek here without the amazing humor. He says...
Why, is she a little bit Alexis?
She's a little bit Alexis. Ew, actually.
Ew, David.
David, stop.
Ew.
So Jake even goes as far as to say that he will not give Zeke, her dad's business partner, the letters that she and the card that she needs to deliver in order to make all this work out.
Dick move.
Yep. As she's on her way back with her boyfriend back to New York, she decides to break off her engagement with him and goes back to Saul's via a charter bus. We end the movie with our fast-paced socialite finding the true meaning of Christmas while also finding love with the small-town guy, all while the town Christmas Eve celebration takes place, where, conveniently, Zeke, her dad's business partner, is playing the role of Santa, and he makes a big old declaration of that tradition, friendship, and love are the most important gifts of all. And then Jake and Ellen dance as, because, you know, Andy McDowell totally fucking negotiated this into her contract, Aunt Debbie sings Silent Night.
What are, Christmas Inheritance.
You are correct.
Boom.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's just some obvious plot lines tied in not so clever titles.
I did try to not use the word inherit because I was like, that will give it away.
I heard you stopping yourself. Well, unfortunately, I feel like mine will be immediately given away, but I enjoyed this so much, I don't care. Norwich, 1334, pre-plague, I assume.
I already know.
A special ceremony. See, special ceremony. I didn't say what kind. I just said it's special.
1334.
Emily, it is a special ceremony in 1334. It could be anything. It could be anything. You don't.
Advent calendar.
A special ceremony is about to begin when a pair of brothers take to their horses into the forest in search of a hawk. At least I think it's a hawk. One of the brothers encounters an old crone. I'm sorry. They just proceed.
Crone.
Yes, she doesn't have a name. It's old crone. It's just
terrible.
Crone. You hear
Netflix is contributing to one-dimensional portrayal and of also women over the age of 50.
Women's internalized misogyny
exactly.
is rampant.
Way to go.
But they say old crone about 50 times in this movie, and you have to.
It just
certain
reminds
point.
Me of was it Happy Gilmore where he's like, why they can't evict his out of her house is because she's so old.
Anyway, one of the brothers encounters an old crone who tells him tale of steel birds, planes, and of magic boxes, TVs,
and trains and automobiles.
What?
Oh, I thought you said steel.
Steel birds.
Yeah, planes.
Planes.
That's what I said. Okay, never mind.
The translation is planes in this movie.
Okay, I see. Okay.
She then hurdles him into the future with zero explanation other than he has to fulfill an ominous quest and gives him what looks like an infinity stone, which means because in this movie, Netflix tries to make an attempt to connect the holiday movie universes. So they try to connect, in this movie, presupposes
the NCU, the Netflix cinematic.
That's what I was like, MCU who? All about HCU, Netflix a movie cinematic universe. I forgot the M, but we all know where I was going with that. Because in this movie, they try to tie it to The Christmas Prince, which I thought was hilarious.
Amazing.
I laughed, me and my friend Becca laughed so hard, we rewound it. We're like, wait. Did they just reference Christmas
That's
Prince?
Like fucking when people tried to connect Frozen to other Disney movies,
But this is like
Frozen.
This is an overt
Amazing.
One.
Amazing.
And the other thing that they try to do, or the other thing that they do in this, is the characters blatantly watch other Netflix Christmas movies. So there's a scene where our
cross promotion,
where our time traveler watching Holiday in the Wild, was like Inception is happening.
No.
Inception. Yes.
No.
Inception Love and Game on 100. It is crazy.
So it's like, yeah, no, I was going to say, will we find out eventually that the NHMCU is all in the mind of an autistic child or in a snow globe?
Emily, you and I are in a snow globe simulation right fucking now.
We're taking the red pill next time.
So in the year of our Lord, 2019, we meet a teacher with a lot of really nice outerwear, recently been dumped. But fear not, based on the advice that she gives one of her middle school age children about love, she has not given up on it. Visits a local Santa's village with her niece, where she has a meet-cute with her time-traveling gent. She spills her hot cocoa all over him, so you know this relationship is built to last. Anyway, post-Santa's village, she hits our time-traveling friend with her whole car, and thanks to misplaced his floppy wannabe Heath Ledger hair and her generational wealth, she invites him to stay in her massive guest house at her insanely large manor, despite the fact that this man wields a sword.
Who knew that dodging vehicular manner could lead so much? Don't worry, I didn't read anything.
Don't look at my screen. Yes, I mean, tell that to Matthew Broderick, he knows. Or Barbara Bush.
Or the Kennedys.
Exactly. You know what? Wasps are not good at driving, apparently.
No, but they can certainly drink.
They love martinis. Anyway, as I said before, this man openly wields a sword. When it comes to the modern world, though, he also has absolutely no learning curve when it comes to modern English. It also, he takes the future in really cool, calm stride. Electricity, whatever. Running water, been there. Computers, I don't give a rip. Unclear if his lack of emotion about living in the fucking future is because he has an Infinity Stone, but he learns to speak American slang via Netflix, baby.
That's amazing.
Anyway, within seconds of him moving into her guest house, she dumps her entire emotional purse about her ex, whom she refers to as the douche, which ends up paying off the really funny running gag throughout the movie. He responds to everything that she says with, indeed, and he continues to refer to her ex as dalliances with the douche. I gotta say, this movie did genuinely get me multiple times.
I cannot wait to watch this.
It's very funny. Again, it bears repeating, he has a sword the whole time, and no one has a reaction about it.
It's called concealed carry.
Okay, I know they're in Ohio, but I don't know if they have a concealed carry. Whatever. No one has a reaction about it. It really sort of upsets me. Yeah. After he performs several good deeds and insults the holiday fair Santa's wife by calling her an old crone, which prompts the line in the entire movie when that Santa's village Santa turns to him and says, hey, buddy, can you stop calling my wife an old crone?
Oh, God.
He finds the actual old crone and goes back to 1334, but then chooses to follow his heart and go back to 2019 to be with the lead love interest. It sort of leaves, so this is where it becomes very Marvel-esque, is there's a post-credit sequence where his brother finds the old crone in the forest as well, and then she sends him to 2019 as well.
Ah.
So there's definitely going to be a sequel, which I have a proposed title to, if you want to guess which movie this is.
It's The Night Before Christmas.
No shit. Okay, so I have a proposed sequel, which I'm sure a bunch of other people have also tweeted this before, but The Wedding Night, spelled with a K?
A White Knight Christmas.
Something like that. I wonder if we'll follow the brother or if we'll watch Vanessa Hudgens get married. But either way, A Night Before Christmas was a fucking delight. I had a really good time. It was very stupid. I liked it better than Princess Switch, which I mean, granted, I did watch it at like 2 o'clock in the morning after going out drinking. But like I still stayed awake and watched the whole thing. And there were parts of it that were very funny, but there were also parts of it that dragged. But A Night Before Christmas is like a quick hour and a half. There are a couple slow spots, but it's so funny and it's so stupid.
Who plays our knight? Is it?
I don't know. I don't know. But Vanessa Hudgens is really good. I've just really found her niche.
As I told you, now that Lori Loughlin faces jail time,
I feel like Hallmark. I'm saying that they're. I'm saying like Hallmark inspired movie stars are the next wave.
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. Is like I think the Hudgens is here to take that the queen role, you know, and just will be every year or so, you know, it's like that, and like it's like Candace Cameron Bure was like the Hallmark was the queen.
Well, I think Vanessa Hudgens is on that track because this her first produced movie with Netflix.
Oh, nice!
And I think she's gonna produce Princess Switch 2 Electric Boogaloo, where they find out they have a third sibling.
What?
But the guy who played Sir Cole is named Josh Whitehouse. I don't British. I don't know. I'm clicking on his name currently. He doesn't tell me anything. He was in some episodes of Poldark, which I believe is a BBC show, so maybe he is British.
He's going to be in this Valley Girl reboot. Is he the Nicolas Cage?
I think so.
No.
Yeah, I don't like that. We can't get into that. Let's wrap this up. Okay. So, would you recommend Let It Snow and Harry? I've already stated how much I fucking loved A Night Before Christmas. Holiday in the Wild is kind of snoozy. I feel like you can watch the first 15 minutes and then turn it off.
I liked them both equally. I would say Christmas Inheritance plays really nicely into the Netflix Hallmark movie, holiday movie trope. And then Let It Snow is just like a delightful, adorkable, you know, teen movie that is like a lot of its, you know, peers in that genre.
Well, this was fun. We're going to come back next week with a Hallmark game.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think will be even more deranged than the Netflix one, because I feel like Hallmark doesn't get as much press as like the Netflix ones. Like A Night Before Christmas and Let It Snow, I think, had a lot of press around it.
For sure.
And because obviously on the Netflix app, Christmas Inheritance. So
yeah.
I didn't watch it. I just, the trailer auto played. So I think Netflix will be way more interesting. Yeah. So please come back next week and listen to our thoughts on a few classic good, bad Hallmark movies that are going on right now during their 355 days of fucking Christmas. Like, whatever. It's always Christmas on that fucking channel. I don't know what to tell you.
I think they started on October 20th this year, like pre-Halloween.
Oh, my God. I feel like it's been going on for 87 years.
Mark my words, Labor Day next year.
Oh, my Lord. I think you're right. I think
it has to be.
You've heard it here first, folks.
That's right.
Thank you for listening. please subscribe to us if you enjoyed this podcast. And don't forget to rate and review us. And if you want to follow us, you can find us on Facebook at The Old Millennials Pod.
And on Instagram as well, at The Old Millennials Pod.
And then you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mirote.
And I'm at Emily Abijan.
And until next time, bye.